Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode 157 with Chris Jones. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Chris Jones, we explore a number of interesting topics like success is a process, not a destination, the difference between whys and best practices, and if it can't be done, generate five ideas of how it can be done. Today's podcast upgrade is the Winter School Roadmap, and I'm crossing my fingers here, but hopefully we're going to get Mary's special meatball recipe that's Chris's wife as well. You can download it at betterleadersbetterschools.com/157-Chris-Jones, or you can click the podcast upgrade link in the show notes page. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving students' soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I am so pumped today to have Chris Jones on the show because he is a member of the Mastermind and has quickly become a friend. He's added so much extra value to the group, and I'm really interested to see how this conversation goes and the value he adds to the podcast through the conversation. Well, Chris Jones has been an educator in Massachusetts for 18 years. He's just wrapping up his 11th year as a building administrator, the last 2.5 of which he's been the principal of Seekonk High School in Seekonk, Massachusetts. Chris is passionate about continuous improvement and the idea that success is not a destination, but a process. Chris's beliefs around the importance of a positive work environment, continuous growth, and a healthy family work balance can be seen in the presentations and workshops he's given for the MSAA and MASQ. His participation in the Better Leaders, Better Schools Mastermind Group and his scheduling of a family night each week. Chris is described by his current superintendent as being wholly invested in the success of the school, a creative problem solver who is able to deliberate yet be decisive, be creative yet accountable, calm and clear-headed even under the most trying of times, and has built a strong, collaborative, and collegial school culture. He is a positive influence on teachers, teaching, and learning. Chris blogs on a regular basis and has begun vlogging as a way to reflect on his process, share his story, and get others to think about different perspectives. His overarching goal is to positively model continuous improvement in all facets of life by being purposeful, acting with integrity, and building character. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, Danny. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, besides saying deliberate instead of deliberate, but you know, that's all good.
Yeah, it happens.
And the thing, like, you know, you're recording the intro and you're like, all right, should I cut that before we go live? Should I re-record? Or, you know how I roll in the Mastermind. I'm exactly, you know, what you see, what you get. I try to be authentic. And so we're just going to roll with it. Is that okay?
No, that sounds great. You know, they say that people like authentic, and I think that's about as authentic as you get right there.
I appreciate it, buddy. I'm interested in this family night, so I want to start there.
Sure.
And tell us, like, how often are you scheduling family night? What are you doing during family night? Yeah, let's start there.
All right. Well, first off, if you don't schedule something, it doesn't get done, right? So it's important. Family's important. So every week we schedule a family night in the middle of the week. It's on Wednesdays. And funny enough, it's on Wednesdays before the Mastermind, because the kids go to bed before I get to the Mastermind. So what I do is I get home as early as possible. I get as much done and then leave work as early as possible. And that's the night that work stays at work. And when I get home, that's going to be hanging out with the boys, finishing up some of their homework before we have a family dinner. We sit down down for a family dinner. And then what we'll do is we'll play some games as a family. We'll hang out and talk as a family. Or sometimes, you know, if the boys have a show that they want to watch, we'll just watch a show with the boys and just hang out and be together in that space. Because, you know, our schedules get so busy that we don't always get that. On a typical night, I don't get to spend much time with my boys before they have to go down to bed, or they have wrestling, karate, this activity, that activity, that my wife and I are running back and forth. And then weekends have tournaments and games and things like that. So it's a way for us to connect in the middle of the week when sometimes connections aren't all that meaningful or easy.
Hi, I'm Dan Krynas from the Leader of Learning podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure to check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
So I love and I admire that this time is intentionally blocked out in the schedule, because like you said, you know, if you don't intentionally block off that time, it's not a priority for you. I'm curious, is that just blocked off, or the game you're going to play, the meal you're going to have, the show you might watch, shoot, even the questions you might discuss, are those scripted out ahead of time, or is that more impromptu?
No, that's more impromptu. The one thing that is scripted, and this is by the boys' choice, is dinner. Every Wednesday night, we have spaghetti and meatballs for dinner. My wife is an excellent cook, and so we get her homemade meatballs with spaghetti. And that's by the order of the boys, so we figure we'll give them that decision.
You were recording, and it's almost dinner time over here in Antwerp, Belgium. And so I'm almost wondering, I've been doing these podcast upgrades, right, where people can download a resource. I'm thinking we should get the homemade recipe for the spaghetti and meatballs, but
you know what? I'll talk to her about that. I might have some luck.
Very cool. All right. So we covered family night, and I really appreciate you going through that. I'm really interested in tips and tricks and tactics that leaders use to keep that balance. So thanks for sharing that. But let's start at the beginning for you. And what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
You know, that's a great question. I was inspired to begin in education, not so much by a person or anything like that. I mean, a person played a little part of it, but it was more of an idea. And when I look back at it, the decision to join education or enter education has shaped me just as much as I've shaped that decision. I was not a great student in high school. I was pretty much unengaged in high school. I did my work, I got my grades, things like that, and I participated in sports. But one of the things that really made me want to get into education was the idea of non-responsive teaching. When I was in high school, I experienced a lot of non-responsive teaching. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of people call responsive teaching individualized instruction, differentiated instruction. There's all kinds of words for it. But basically, the idea is that a teacher gets in front of a classroom and needs to respond to different situations, different levels that the students are at and where they are and how ready they are to learn. And so I went through high school where it was mostly cookie cutter. And if you got it, you got it. If you didn't, you didn't. And so I left high school, went to college, and was never very pleased with it. But my grandfather, who I basically lived with, my mother was a single mother. My grandfather was basically the 24/7 male father figure in my life. And he was, you know, generations before me. So he always told me, look, you have to own it. If you don't like something, you have to go out and change it. If you're disappointed with something, you have to go out and make it better. And so as I went through some different jobs, I was a coach, I was a coppersmith, I gave tours at a battlefield, I looked at things. And each one of those positions, I was teaching people things. And from the feedback I got from those individuals, it seemed like I'd be pretty good at education. As a coach, obviously, athletes are at different levels. So you take them where they are and then you coach them up from there. As a coppersmith, I remember having an individual that I was teaching how to do copper. I was teaching how to solder. And, you know, through the mistakes, through the different scenarios, you have to take them from there. And the same thing with tour guide. So unfortunately, before I became a teacher, my grandfather passed. And my mother, who was a strong woman, said to me basically the same thing. She said, look, if you have a problem with how you were educated in high school, what good are you doing for anybody else around you if you don't go make a change? And so I started teaching. You want to talk about responsive teaching. I started teaching in an alternative high school. And that is all over the place as far as where, what you need to do, how you need to respond, where you need to instruct from. And my mother said to me when I got the job, she said, good, now go make a change. And as I look back on it, it really informs, and this is the part where I think it shaped me as much as I shaped it. It really informs my belief, or supports my belief, that success is a process. It's not a destination, because we become successful every step of the way. Whether we win or whether we fall short, we have to adjust and we have to get better. Because if we fall short, we improve ourselves by looking at those mistakes. If we win, we improve ourselves by maybe pushing that goal out a little further. And it really came full circle to me when I received my doctorate. And one of the findings in the writing that I did that really supported another idea, this whole idea of best practices. If anybody talks to me, they'll find out I don't believe in best practices. I believe in wise practices. I don't believe there's a set of practices that work for every student, for every teacher, for every staff member across the board. It can't really be generalized. There are some ideas that you can take, but you really have to adjust them to who you're looking at, because as anybody that's been in a classroom knows, you have that same group of students one day to another, that's a different group of students you're looking at. So you really have to be responsive. So pretty much it was an idea, and I got some push from family members.
That's really incredible. That idea of success is a process, not a destination, the ownership that your grandpa and your mom instilled in you. And at the root of it was really, how are you going to be a part of the solution, right? That's the question they were asking. And I love it because it doesn't leave a lot of room for excuses, right? It leaves room for failure, because then you can say, well, what did you learn, right? How are you going to change your approach? But it activates you and you're no longer a bystander. You have to be proactive and you have to be a part of the solution. So I really appreciate what grandpa and your mom taught you.
Yeah, it was very meaningful. And I just heard, you know, geez, I wish I could remember where I heard it from. It might have been from Jimmy Cassis or Jeff Sewell. Next time somebody says something can't be done, have them pause and name three reasons why it can be. And I just really like the idea of you have to be part of the solution, because we can all sit around and look at problems and complain about problems. But really, what are we contributing to the greater good for everybody around us, or even for our own well-being, if we're not part of the solution and making things better?
So just to rephrase what I heard you say is when people are kind of stuck in this stinking thinking and finding all the problems, right, the reasons why we can't do X, Y, and Z, your challenge to the listener is to generate at least five ideas of how it could be done, despite all the challenges that are identified.
Correct. 3 to 5 ideas. I found that using that, that's even helped me here with my staff going through some things so that we can better help students.
Love it. And so you haven't heard this episode because we're actually recording in February. This is getting released in August. But in the first week of March, I'll direct all the listeners back to a bonus episode I did with Jesse Cole. And Jesse is the owner and operator of Fans First Entertainment. He's turned a couple of college summer league baseball teams into like the most desirable sporting event in his location. And one thing that he taught me that I think connects here, Chris, that I really love is when people are saying, okay, that's a terrible idea, right? Chris, as a leader, have you ever had somebody say, oh, Chris, that's the worst idea I've ever heard?
Just maybe once or twice.
So here's what Jesse says when he encounters that person. He goes, what would make that idea worse then? Let's talk about that. And I love that approach, because what he's realized is when people say that's a terrible idea or it can't be done, that's a motivation to him that they're onto something. It's definitely not fully baked yet. Okay. The whole idea isn't there, but it's coming to formation because it's polarizing people. And what you want to avoid, right, is anybody that just, whatever, in the middle. But if people love it or they hate it, right, now you're onto something. You're starting to figure it out. So again, just a recap for the listener, he asks, okay, that's a terrible idea. Well, what would make it even worse? And I absolutely love that.
That's fantastic. I like taking it that way, because that's even, you know, the whole idea of getting somebody to move off that point of just digging their heels in, because, you know, the whole idea of change and where people sit with change, that could be a whole nother episode. But the idea that you're getting them to think about, all right, so here's what we're proposing and how could it be worse? If you think it's so bad, what way could it be worse? Or give me 3 to 5 ways that it'd be better, because if it's so terrible, you must have a better way in mind. So, and then it starts moving the ball. So that, yeah, I like that piece. I'm going to look forward to that episode.
Chris, how do you describe your leadership style and how did you develop it?
I would describe my leadership style as collaborative, but I'm also a hands-off leader. I believe that I want to hire the best people possible and bring the best people possible into the school that I'm working in or that I'm working with. And that's more of a hands-off approach once I get that done, because I want to treat them like professionals. I want to lift people up and let them know that they have the capability to be better than they thought they could be. And that doesn't occur by me being a micromanager, me following up on everything they do. I mean, just as an example, we're looking for a position. And this just happened earlier today. We're looking for a position. So I got all the applications and I forwarded them to my assistant principal. And I said, you know what? I think you can handle this. You mind taking over this and taking the lead on this? Pick a couple people you want to sit in on the interviews with you. I don't need to be involved until the last step and run with it. And so he emailed me back, yes. And then I saw him in his office. I walked by his office. I knocked on the door and I said, hey, you got that email? You're all set with that? And he looked at me and he said, hey, thanks. I appreciate that. That's a lot of trust. Anything that shows people they can be more than their current situation, to me, is a winner. And sometimes people will look at that and say, well, what about those staff that you don't hire, that you didn't bring on board, that might not be on the same wavelength as you? And for me, that turns into a whole coaching through reflection type of situation. I think it's important that as a leader, we need to coach people. It's never a black and white, either they can do it or can't do it. We always have to step forward with the idea that people can perform at a higher level than they currently are. They just need the coaching support to do it.
And I don't know if you've actually formalized the process or documented it, and it's fine if you haven't. Maybe we can just process it out loud. But what does this coaching through reflection look like for you?
Coaching through reflection for me is, so first, things have to be observed. So upon observation of a certain behavior or a skill set, I sit down with the individual and we talk about how it went. It's not always a nice, you know, easy conversation about how it went. But once that is brought to light about it went like this, it could have gone like this, and I give a couple ideas, then we look at how we can adjust it to make it better. One of my biggest issues with observations, and has always been, it's not a huge issue now, but it started out as a huge issue and I'm still working on it, is that you go into that teacher's classroom who maybe you're not too sure of the content material, and they do a really good job because they're a really good teacher. So you write up an observation and you have a conversation about what you saw, and there's really no steps for improvement in it. So really, what good is that observation besides me being able to walk in the classroom and pat them on the back and say, hey, you're doing a good job, keep it up? The whole idea of coaching is to shore up every area and make those areas you're strong in even stronger. So I make sure that I really focus on how they can get better. And that conversation is usually easier when it's started with something they're really strong at. If a teacher is super strong in engagement, say they open the lesson. Actually, I was in a classroom earlier today, and I go in for informal observations as well. And then I use Voxer to chat back to the teacher so they get an idea of where I'm coming from, whether I don't like something, whether I'm really psyched about something. They get that idea through my voice. Saw this teacher. They had a really good hook. They were starting the nervous system, so they were talking about the brain. And what they did with the students to get the students involved was they put out a couple facts. They called them Jeopardy facts about the brain that people wouldn't think normally or know normally about the brain, just these random facts. So I saw that and the kids were engaged in it, and you got a couple of oohs and ahs and, you know, oh, I didn't know that, as the teacher was going over it. But it was teacher centered. It was from the front. It was a PowerPoint. So the concept was good. The teacher obviously felt comfortable with it, had the right idea. So what I did is in that box, I told them that I thought they were doing a good job. The concept was good. But what if they changed that into more of a pre-assessment and had the students answer that and then go over the questions quickly, probably in the same amount of time or less time, so it's efficient. But then the kids have an idea of more surprise or more, hey, I did know that. Just little tweaks where they're strong. And then once they complete that and they try those things out, I find that, you know, we can try and shore up the other areas. Unfortunately, too many times we focus on the weaknesses and only on the weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we just focus on the weaknesses, we can increase our strength in the weaknesses to a certain point, but that's a much more stressful change than taking some strengths and improving those. And, you know, it's that whole little win thing to get started. Improving our strengths and then saying, hey, I got this. I can struggle a little bit with where I'm weak. I can become more vulnerable and admit where I really need help, because that's the hardest thing for a lot of us to do. And that's where the coaching part comes in. And then you really support them when they start working on those weaknesses.
And is there anything that you do that maybe it just seems common sense, but for me, it might be an aha moment. So I'm just curious in terms of building the environment, the trust, the rapport, so that people can get to that place to ask for help and really benefit from the full coaching relationship?
I tell stories and I'm vulnerable to the people. If I come across, because I, you know, some different leaders I've known have come across like they know and that's it, that's very off-putting. But I use stories with the teachers to say, you know, when I did something similar, or, you know, I was doing a lesson like this and then I tried this and I found this worked so much better. The kids were engaged. So to build that trust, I try to get in classrooms a lot and interact with teachers a lot so that it's not a shock that the principal is talking to you. It's not a shock that, you know, Dr. Jones wants to see you or speak to you about something. I can have more casual conversations. That's one of the reasons I love that app now, where if I come across as vulnerable and I come across as truly inquisitive, which I am, you can't fake being authentic. If you're really trying to improve things for students, that's going to come across. And nobody got into teaching to be bad. Nobody wants to be a bad teacher.
Right.
So people really do want to improve, but it's hard. And, you know, I explained this to him at a staff meeting one time, that how many times have we gone to a professional development workshop, and I told him I'd raise my hand first, and we see some rock star teacher up front giving the workshop, a rock star leader, and they're saying, oh, I do this and this, and you're sitting there nodding your head and saying, yeah, I do that. No, you don't. You do it maybe once, maybe twice, but not on a consistent basis. But it's really hard to be honest with ourselves about where we need to improve. But that's the only place growth can start from, is complete honesty and openness with ourselves. So I start by being vulnerable, really being inquisitive, because look, from my history, I want school to be an engaging place. I want school to be something more valuable and relevant than the idea of compulsory. So to do that, teachers have to be doing the best they can do in front of them. And that only comes through constant improvement, because times are changing. The future's here, and even more of the future showing up tomorrow. So things aren't the way they used to be. And if we don't continue to improve, then we're going to become irrelevant.
So listeners, the challenge to you, are you using stories? And people love to learn from stories. Are you using stories through your coaching and reflective activities that you're leading your staff through? And are you modeling through those stories, right?
Yep.
And then secondly, are you staying curious as well in terms of what you're finding out, that real-time data in front of you, in terms of, you know, what you need to provide that person and how to help them get from point A to point B?
Thanks for distilling that, Danny. Sometimes I get a little too wordy about things that I'm passionate about. So thanks for clarifying that. But that is right on, the whole idea of stories, modeling, and truly being inquisitive about why is this and how can it be better?
Listen, I'm the host, so my job is to ask questions and to summarize, and you're the hero of the show, so you have fun and tell those stories and enjoy this process.
I don't know if I'd go as far as to say hero, but I'm enjoying it so far, so.
Cool. Well, let's talk about routines and rituals. You know, I love to ask how people set themselves up for impactful days. So do you have any routines or rituals that you use?
You know, I have a morning routine, and, you know, it came from, you provide so many resources, Danny, through your Better Leaders, Better Schools. And I first met you at the national conference in Philly. I sat in your workshop on how to accomplish a year's worth of work in 12 weeks
or something
like that. And the whole idea of blocking scheduling, and I've been working with that and refining as much as possible. But so I do some blocking of schedule during the day. But really, the ritual that I have is in the morning. I get up at 3:45 every morning and I work out. I go downstairs into a home gym we've put together. I work out and then I get ready for the day. And I have probably a half an hour where I sit down, I sit with my calendar, I write down some items that I'm grateful for, and I set three major goals for the day and how those tie into my overarching goal that I'm trying to achieve. And then I participate in a Twitter chat. I don't necessarily participate in it that much, but I at least see what the question is. It's one question, it's a 15-minute chat, and sometimes the question is relevant to me, sometimes it's not, but it's interesting to see what other people think. And so that kind of gets my brain moving after reflecting on what's going to be occurring throughout the course of the day. And then I'm the breakfast man at home. So I make the boys lunches. After that, I cook the boys and my wife breakfast for their day to get their day going. And then I'm out the door and off on my way to work.
We talked a bit about unplugging in terms of the family night you schedule. But the rest of the evenings, what do you do to unplug from work? Or if you struggle with that, what's the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge for that is just personal, I guess, because the rest of the nights are pretty booked with karate, wrestling practice, and so forth, just different things like that. So what I'll do is, and of course, evening meetings. I know people understand that a position like mine has a lot of evening meetings. So what I'll do is if I have an evening meeting, I'll stay through. I won't bother going home. I live about a half an hour away. So I won't bother going home and I'll stay to do work so I can keep more work at work. And then on the other nights where I don't have a late meeting, if I go to one of the boys' practice, I'll pick up a book, I'll read, which is a way of unplugging. But sometimes, you know, if this report needs to be done or that paper needs to be finished up or something to that effect, I will sit during practice and do it. So the unplugging isn't completely there. I'll maybe unplug and sit with my wife for an hour and a half just for some alone time for us once we get home and everything quiets down. But other than that, it is difficult. And that's just because of my schedule and the idea or my idea of if I have this time, if I have this hour and a half where the boys are at practice, I try and get some work done.
What would a perfect day at school look like for you?
Perfect day at school. That's a good question. I'd greet all the staff and students in the morning like I currently do, and preferably it would be on one of my welcome sign Wednesdays. I really like those.
I love those too. So thank you for tagging me recently a lot on Twitter when you do that. I love it. So very cool. Yeah, please keep explaining that.
Oh, okay. Well, the welcome sign Wednesdays, I can't take credit for it. I picked it up from Marty Gagan, who's a principal of a middle school, and a Brian McCann, who's a principal of a high school nearby. But what it is when the students arrive every day, I'm standing outside with a sign that has some kind of positive message on it. You are super. You're awesome. Thank you for coming today. You're welcome here. You improve SHS. Just some kind of sign like that where I'm standing out there and then we take pictures. The students take pictures of with me and the sign and then I post them up. But it's really a nice way because I get the students walking by me that will fist bump me, will high five me, will say good morning to me. Some will just laugh and look away because they don't want to get in a picture. Some will laugh and look away because they think their principal's crazy. But either way, I get that laugh and a smile on the first thing when they get off the bus, when they get out of the car at the front of the school from their parents. So now, you know, parents are honking and waving and things like that. So it's really a cool way to let students know that, you know, this is their building. They need to not come here and expect boredom and just drudgery. They need to be happy about coming here and at least put a smile on their face. I always say I'm not looking for cartwheels, but a smile will do well. And I started on Wednesday because the first people I started it with, and I think this is important, is I started it with the staff on our first day back from summer break. They came in for an in-service and it was on a Wednesday. And so I held that sign there as they all came in to sign in for the in-service day. And it just really put a smile on people's face. So other than that, every morning I'm in there smiling at people. It's nice because now the students come in and they get to me before I get to them with a good morning. And the whole smile thing really took more meaning on from, I can't remember the name of the book we just finished reading in Master. Mastermind.
Happiness Advantage.
Yeah, where he talks about mirror neurons. And I just ran an exercise with my staff on mirror neurons to talk about the climate that they're promoting around the school when they're walking around and they're seeing people and they're looking at people. If they're smiling, people are going to smile back. If they're frowning, people are going to frown back. So that took on more meaning for me after I read it in that book. But after that, I schedule about a half an hour buffer block, I call it, for emails and any other little things to sit down. I try to really keep my emails to 2, maybe 3 times a day. And I try to keep it to a half hour to 45 to an hour, depending on how many emails I get. Then I would briefly touch base with my admin team to discuss any issues, which I do once a week anyways. We have a scheduled mandatory admin team meeting. There's 3 of us to discuss schedules for the next few weeks, issues that are coming up, things we want to focus on. And then I'd spend the rest of the morning visiting classrooms with both formal and informal observations. I like to use that time, usually from around 9:30 to 11:30 or so, going in and out of classrooms. And then I close out the day by addressing any issues that arose during the day. And I really try to save like the paperwork stuff, things like that, for after school. Because teachers and students, they have a finite amount of time they're here. So really when I'm prioritizing, that's my biggest priority, is to be out interacting with people, building a more positive culture and one of trust and friendship during the day. Paperwork can wait until after.
Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizebinder.com. Well, a couple of quick shout outs because you did a shout out for Welcome Sign Wednesday. Shout out to Nancy Alvarez because she's the one who taught me Voxer and how to use that, basically how you do to keep that conversation going with your staff. So that's awesome. Want to honor her. And then another shout out too to Mark French. Don't remember what episode he was on the podcast. It was a long time ago when this podcast first started, and he's done so many incredible things since then. But I just appreciate, you know, with the Principles in Action movement and just this idea of getting out of your office, which I see in you, right?
Yeah.
And to recap for the listener as well, you know, the Welcome Sign Wednesday and the connection with the neurons in our brain and this idea of priming from the happiness advantage. Chris, our next book, we're going to get into Thinking Fast and Slow, talks about the mind, system one, system two. But what we want, right, out of our environments and out of our, I guess, ideal version, optimal version of our life, so much of it is within our control. And it could be as simple as what messages we expose ourselves to and what messages we send out constantly. And so the fact that Welcome Sign Wednesday, the first thing that a kid sees is how special they are and how much better they make the community. Just huge kudos to you to get them excited about school, connected to the community, and ready to go, right, in a rigorous day of learning. And you're priming them for success.
That is so true that we have a choice. And I think that's what a lot of people sometimes miss. And you know, in times of stress, I miss that as well, that we always have a choice. There's always a choice whether we're going to approach something in a good frame of mind, in a bad frame of mind. And, you know, we could plug it all day. But another book we read in BLBS is Josh Spodek, Leadership Step by Step, where he talks about reframing. And it's just so important to realize that we not only have the ability to reframe things for ourselves, but we have the ability to reframe things for other people. I had a staff member that was very negative. Everything was negative. Everything was bad. And I ended up sitting and trying to build a relationship with this staff member during this past summer. I said that I wanted to meet this person a couple of times. And just sitting with that person, trying to build a relationship first, because you can't just come in and reframe something for somebody. Ultimately, that reframing is on them. But building that relationship, you can definitely influence in how somebody frames their current reality. And that is so powerful in how well somebody performs, in how they affect those around us. And I mean, when you're talking about schools and students, one of the reasons that school is so important and the attitude among teachers is so important is because the lessons that teachers are teaching students very rarely just stay with the curriculum. Often they go well beyond the curriculum and have to do with life and the things that are important and how students look at things and how students feel they're valued. That to not do something like that is really missing out. I mean, we do some other things around the school, like we have students paint murals in the cafeteria and the walls. We put signs of, or not signs, but pictures, poster pictures of our own students that we had people come in and do canons of in class, whether they're working with microscopes, doing experiments, reading a book, participating in class, in sports. And we've hung those up around the building because we want students to know that this is their building. This is how we do things here. This is what we do here. And I think that's just so important in getting somebody's mind, for lack of a better term, right before they enter into a situation where they're going to tax themselves. They're going to be working hard, but that's okay because they feel all right about it. And we're here to support them.
So, you know, we've discussed a few things that you're really proud of in terms of leading your school. But in the past year, what's been something that you've been extremely, just maybe the most excited about for either accomplishing or attempting?
There's a couple things I'm really proud. I'm trying to think of putting it under one umbrella. I'm really proud about the staff's ability, because it really isn't about me. It's about me being part of the discussion, but being able to walk away from the discussion and have things go on. I'm really proud about the asking. Our staff's been asking some hard questions and solving some difficult issues that we have around the school. And we've had a lot of success at that. Just to run down, we have one thing that's winter school. We ran into the problem that it would become numerically impossible for students to pass a course for the year, say biology, numerically impossible for them to pass the course of the year halfway through the year. So now you have a student that is struggling for whatever reason, whether it's on them or whether they just don't understand the material. But either way, they're struggling as it is. And now they've been told that no matter how hard they try, they're not going to pass for the year. And they've been told this in January. So I don't think people have to be too on the ball to understand what kind of student and what kind of behaviors they're going to be looking at for the rest of the year. And now, so teachers, the leadership prior to me, you know, encouraged teachers to give a 55, but that still makes it difficult. So we looked at how we can get students to the point where they're numerically able to pass without tampering with the integrity of grades, how we get them to numerically pass for the year. But more importantly, clearly they didn't get the skills they need to be successful in the second half of the year. So how do we do that? So what we did is we took winter school. So any student that gets from 55 to a 60, we select those students, we talk to the teachers, and we get the units that they need, those core concepts that they really need to master or to understand to be successful in the second half of the year. And so then we set up a 6-week period where students, they pay $25 and there's a computer-based curriculum that we use that's been very successful. We also use it in our summer school program. And they do that. They're mandated to 2 days a week for an hour and a half each day where they come in and they work on the curriculum. Once they complete those units that the teachers have given them, they receive a 65 for the first semester, which is a passing grade. It's the lowest grade you can get without failing. They get a 65. That gives them the ability to pass for the year. And plus they have the knowledge and understanding of the topics they need that build on the first semester or that the second semester builds on so that they can be successful on their own. And we noticed that we almost had no use for summer school this year. Our enrollment was so down this past year because of the success of winter school.
So wait, well, let's pause there for a second. So you just said that summer school enrollment's down because winter school has been such a success.
Correct.
That's awesome. Yeah. Sorry to cut you off, but keep going.
No. We were really proud of that because we were wondering, you know, so you do a pilot because you can do anything and call it a pilot. But we did the pilot and it just worked out so well. And actually right now we're in the first week of winter school this year with students that we have. So along those lines, we've also created a personal development class. And there's a couple things that are really beautiful about this. We have students that come in from middle school into ninth grade, and we don't really do a bridge program or anything like that. But we have ninth graders that struggle. And because the education department puts out statistics and has this EWIS program, it's an early warning indicator system that shows students based on a bunch of data put together, attendance, test scores, things like that, discipline records, what students are most likely to not persevere through high school. That's awesome information to have in ninth grade because now we can start to work on it. But the question becomes, how do you work on it? Because you don't have all the resources you want. So as we were talking about this, we actually had our two school adjustment counselors. One's actually a psychologist that likes working here enough. She's staying as an adjustment counselor. They said, you know what? We'll co-teach the class. We'll use research-based practices on organizational skills and things like that. And we'll take these kids that are on the EWIS list and they'll get a semester of personal development class for the first semester of their freshman year to get them off the ground. And then the guidance counselors, they'll graduate from that and the guidance counselors will keep tabs on them to make sure they're using the skills that they learned the first semester throughout the second semester. And the beauty of that is that, one, we had two personnel volunteer and say, we'll take this on. The other piece of that is it's now turned into an RTI type program, a response to intervention. We have a team that looks at things like this, but now this really helps us ID these kids because as they move through the first semester, they should graduate at the end. If they don't, quite often, we're looking at a special education referral that there might be something further below the surface that needs to be worked on.
Yeah, because you've provided just such incredible support. If that's still not helping the child succeed, then you're looking, is there another issue potentially under the surface that we haven't uncovered yet?
Right. And the first go around we had of this is we had 12 kids enter and 11 exited and 9 were successful throughout the second semester outside of the class. So we had a high percentage of success and we're just about to find out now that the first group's been exited and we take another group because the class runs second semester, but the class runs second semester repopulated with kids that our student support team has picked up throughout the first portion of the year, the first half of the year. We then put them in the personal development course because they're falling down. And so something's going wrong and we need to help support them. So that's worked out really well also.
And Chris, in the pre-chat, we talked about this Model Unified Champion program, which is new to me. So it might be new to some of the listeners. Can you unpack a little of the success you've experienced there?
Sure. A couple of years ago, we decided to get involved with Unified Sports. And Unified Sports is run through the Special Olympics of Massachusetts. At least in Massachusetts it is. It's a national thing. And so what you do is you become a unified sports school. And you get a unified team. And basically you have the students that qualify as special education students. We put an advertisement out among our student body and other students in the general population, they sign up to be paired with these students and they become the athletes pair. And so then what we do is we put together athletic teams. We did a track team and we did a basketball team. What you have to do to become a unified champion school is you have to participate in the sports teams. You have to have a leadership instructional component. So you have to instruct students in being leaders around this. And then you have to run a campaign, the most popular type of campaign. It's got to be an inclusion campaign. The most popular type is to spread the word to end the word. And it's about ending the R word. And so you have a banner, you have a signing, things like that. And you really push for that. Well, we did so well. Our track team became state champions last year. And then we won the Model Unified Champion School of Bristol County and went to Gillette. They brought all the team up to Gillette and gave them a big award. There was a banquet, things like that. So that was really nice. And then Varsity Brand is giving out a national award for school spirit. And we've been nominated to win this national award for inclusion. And we're one of 7 other schools in the nation that have been nominated for this. So we're very excited about that.
Yeah, congratulations. You should be. I'm proud of the work you're doing. Before we get to the marquee question and how you'd build your dream school and we'll shut down the podcast, I want to hear a bit about your mastermind experience. You know, I talk to folks about it quite a bit on the podcast. I'm doing the best I can in terms of articulating what that is. But what I find is the best way to describe the mastermind is to allow current members, you know, the opportunity to say, hey, this is what I've experienced. And so I don't think you knew I'd ask you about it, but just for the listeners, can you describe a bit what the mastermind's been like for you?
Sure. Do you have an extra 45 minutes?
I do. And the funny thing is, I mean, like, yeah, I love doing long form interviews, which is why I don't try to cap these at 20 minutes. If you want to go 45 minutes deep on it, we'll do another episode.
Look, I can say one thing about the mastermind, because, you know, I went back and forth a little bit with the mastermind. Like I said, I met you in Philly. You mentioned it in Philly, sent me an email, and I thought about it. And I think it was in August I called you. The convention was in July. And as far as professional development and improving myself as a professional, getting out of my comfort zone, having support to talk to, and to just move forward, there is nothing I have done and nothing I have heard of that matches the mastermind. And that's just one sentence to start describing it. I mean, meeting once a week is just enough and not too much. It's perfect, the hour format. The idea that there's a forum where we can bring issues that we have, we laugh, we have a good time doing it, it's secure, and there's trust that's built up. And, you know, Danny, I give you a lot of credit for that. To bring together a group of 10 principals, superintendents, assistant principals, and get them to trust each other to where they can have open and honest conversations and push back on ideas we have is something really special that you've put out there and given us a space to do that. The books, I was a reader before, but I'm reading more now because the quality of books that you're giving to us are just so applicable. And then the idea of unpacking them in the mastermind, and usually you're deft enough to do that in one or two questions, is just perfect. But it has, looking back at it, it has helped me grow so much as a professional in the way I look at things, my perspective. You know, I'm building relationships now where before that wasn't very easy for me to do, where I read one of the books and now I'm building relationships. I'm comfortable with it and people are becoming more comfortable with it. I read another book that you guys finished, Deep Work, right before I started, that now I'm into blocking my schedule and trying to schedule off those deep blocks to work and get things done. I noticed that I'm getting better work done in a shorter period of time. I already mentioned the Happiness Advantage, how I've used a couple of things from those. Just every book that we've read, I'm able to take something out of. And Leadership Step by Step by Josh Spodek, who is one of the first books we read, I can't say enough of what that book's done for me. So, the mastermind is a way that you can get professional development that you need, when you need, and how you need. And, you know, if you want to go back to why I got into education, if that's not responsive, I don't know what is. So anybody I see, I tell them, I don't care if there's a wait list, because I'm sure there still is, because it's that good. Get on the wait list. Do yourself a favor and experience something that will change you permanently.
Well, I really appreciate your review of the mastermind there. So thanks for taking a couple minutes to do that. That means a lot to me. And for the listeners, you know, if you do want more information, just go to betterleadersbetterschools.com/MM. And you can read about all the transformation that I guarantee is going to happen if you decide to invest in yourself and apply for the mastermind. And then, like Chris mentioned, now the mastermind is popular enough, it's invitation only. And so basically, if I meet you at a conference or something and we click and I think it would help you, you know, I'm going to invite you to the mastermind. Or the way to be proactive too is to fill out that application, and then I will reach out to you. We'll set up a call and make sure it's, you know, next best choice for you to make in your own professional development. All right. Well, Chris, what message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just a day?
The whole globe, huh? I would put up, I'm caught between two, but it would have to be, I think, use today to own tomorrow. You know, every day there are ups and downs. And those ups and downs are so incredibly important in our journey to who we want to become and who we can become that we have to remember to use them. If we take our wins of today and push our goals out, as I was saying earlier, further, and we take our losses today and we learn from them and we step forward from them more confident with a stronger character, we will definitely own tomorrow instead of tomorrow owning us. So you can make your own future by using today. That would be my message.
All right. Well, you know, this question is how we end the show.
Yeah.
You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school? What would be your top three priorities?
I would have to say people. You have to get the right people, and you have to get people that are passionate about making a difference, people that are open-minded and realize that we all have room to improve. And if you're not improving and you're staying still, you're falling behind, because people are always improving and you want to do the best you can for those around you. So it would definitely be people. It would be flexibility in programming. You know, quite often we get caught in the schedule, the bells. You know, we don't have time to do this because we have to fit this in and there's so many minutes we got to get in a day. I would have flexibility in scheduling. I'm currently right now in the midst of trying to change our school schedule to put some flex scheduling in there so that we can do that. And I think that once that occurs, we're going to really see how far we can get kids engaged and how far we can get them to take their education. So flexibility in programming. And then I think the most important thing is, as I'm thinking about the programming piece and the people piece, is a culture of trust. You know, a school is going to struggle if the teachers don't trust the leaders, if the students don't trust the teachers, but more importantly, and I think this is the most important part, if the leaders don't trust the teachers and the students. I mean, you know, often we talk about, hey, I've got this decision, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Well, how often do we do that in return, where we sit there and look at a teacher and say, you got this, I trust you? How often do we look at students and say, hey, how do you want this place to look? What do you think's important? What would you want your day to look like? And then trust them and act on that. I think we need more of that. So yeah, I think those would be my three things: the right people, flexibility in programming, and then establishing a culture of trust.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Parting words of advice, you know, I would have to say, as we're going through this and talking about these things, I think my parting word of advice would be define who you are. Make sure you define who you are as an individual, a leader, a person, but not what you do. Throughout my life, I think I've arrived at this point in my life because I was always sure of who I was. I always defined who I was as far as my character, purpose, integrity, things like that, but I never defined what I did. And that left me the flexibility and the openness to move to the place that I could serve best and the place that I could have the largest positive impact. So I would advise people to always be sure to define who you are, because you have to have those core values, but not what you do. As far as I lost the second part of that question.
No problem. Best way to get a hold of you.
Oh, please feel free to reach out to me. Anyone. My email is drchrissj@gmail.com. My Twitter is @drcsjones. And my blog is drcsjones.blog. I love connecting and feedback. So I would encourage anybody and everybody to get a hold of me.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Chris. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Chris in the search bar. You get the show notes page with the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Chris, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Oh, thank you for having me, Danny. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the kind words.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.